Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, let me ask you a question. Do you ever feel as life is getting the best of you? That getting through the day is about all you can do, and that trying harder really isn't getting you to where you want to go? Well, the question is, what if the solution isn't trying harder or being better, but embracing the fierce-hearted woman that is inside of you? Well, no one knows that better than my guest for today, Holly Girth. She's written a new book called Fierce Hearted, Live Fully, Love Bravely. Let me get her on the show and we will see what she has to say. Well, Holly Girth has been on the show before. She's a best-selling writer, a licensed counselor. She's a certified life coach and speaker. She's co-founder of InCourage with an IN, an online destination for women, which receives more than 1 million page views just in its first 6 months and much more after that. She also reaches out to readers through her popular blog, hollygirth.com, and a partnership with Dayspring. Holly lives in the South with her husband, Mark. Welcome to the show, Holly.
Thank you, Joe. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, I probably should have updated your bio because you don't just live in the South with your husband, Mark. You also have a daughter. Why don't we start with that? Tell me about how that happened.
Yes. Well, we have an unusual family story. Things didn't go the way we planned as far as having kids of our own, and God brought us our daughter, Lavelle, when she was 20 years old. So she had basically aged out of the foster system and not had parents, and we had been praying for a kiddo for about a decade, and God connected us. So we have this crazy, beautiful family story.
It sounds beautiful, and I love how you wrote about it in the book. It wasn't something you were expecting, but God kept putting those pieces together for you. Is that true?
Yes, he did. So if anyone today is listening and they're wondering, is God working in this area of my life where it feels like nothing is happening and my prayers are going unanswered and it's hard and I'm confused, just know I can reassure you that even when you can't see it yet, he is still working behind the scenes.
Mm. Oh, such a good word. You know, when I opened up your book, it caught me right away because you talked about not wanting to write this book, that you actually tried to not write this book, that it would be so raw and vulnerable and maybe even scandalous that you weren't sure you wanted to go there. What was holding you back and drawing you in both at the same time?
Well, I think there are two things. One, I was just flat out tired. I had a deadline and a season of my life where I had really pushed beyond my limits and done a ton of traveling and speaking and just producing. You know, really, I tend to try to prove my worth when I'm stressed, and so I had been doing that to the point where it was really affecting me, and so I was tired, and I was also afraid because I felt like God was wanting me to go to a new place through this book of vulnerability and of just going on a journey with him that would bring about a lot of healing in my own heart. But I knew it wouldn't be safe or easy, that I couldn't just write it from a counselor, life coach perspective like I had a lot of my other books, that I was going to need to go to some new places. And so I did. I fought it for a while. And the first line of the book is, I tried not to write this book.
Well, and sometimes I know as someone who writes blogs as well, there comes to be this point where I think there's something that I should write that would really be vulnerable and maybe open my life up to someone who's reading. And then there's a part of me that instantly grabs that thought and just shoves it right back down because I don't want to do that. I can be encouraging without being vulnerable. And it sounds like you had a little bit of that going on as well.
I did. That's a great way to say it. Yes, I think we can be encouraging without being vulnerable. And I knew I'd come to a place where God was asking me to do both. You know, and I think that takes a lot of wisdom to know when it's time to do that. But I knew. I knew that's what I was supposed to do. And so I have learned in a new way what it means for the truth to set you free. I had always thought of that in terms of the gospel truth from Jesus setting us free, but I think we are also set free when we can speak the truth of our stories, for ourselves and when we can share those with others, because then we find out in that vulnerability that we really are loved and God meets us in those places in unexpected ways. So I was really surprised by how healing it was on the other side of everything to have put it on paper and wrestled through all of that with Jesus, and then getting to share that with other women is such a gift, because I believe that it's not just about my stories. This is about a work that God wants to do in the hearts of his daughters.
Well, and you wrote about that you just kind of, something had happened and you wanted to be done with humans for a while, but that God really challenged you in that. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I, you know, what we do, Joe, it requires our hearts being open in a lot of ways. And I had gotten really hurt by someone, and I thought, enough already. Like, I'm closing my heart. I don't want to do this anymore. And I think we've all been in that place, whether it's a friend or a family member or even someone we don't really know online, that we just get hurt and we think, that's it, I'm done. And so it was in that place that this book began. I actually got on a flight just after this hard thing happened and sat in the dark and thought, that's it, I'm done, and really felt like Jesus was there too, kind of whispering, you know, what is it that you're going to really do about this? And are you ready for me to teach you a new way to live and love? And I pulled out my Kindle because that's all I had with me, and I opened the little notes app and started typing with my little fingers. You know, I'm crying into my napkin that's way too small and probably scaring the person next to me. And I wrote what is now the Fierce-Hearted Manifesto that's in the book. And that was the turning point. That's where that's the place where I decided, you know what, I'm going to keep my heart open, but I need Jesus to show me a different way to live and to love.
So what does it mean to be fierce-hearted? How did you come up with that word and the definition of it?
It was something that almost came to me. I know that might sound a little strange, but really in that plane, in the dark, where I felt totally at the end of myself, that is a word that came to me as an invitation that I could be fierce-hearted. And for me, it means living fully and loving bravely, which is keeping our hearts open. Even when we've been hurt, it's choosing kindness and realizing that takes courage. It's living with resilience. It's basically following the model that Jesus gave us. And I'm so glad that he's the one who empowers us to be fierce-hearted, that we don't have to do it ourselves. We can't do it ourselves. And that's such a relief. So the whole book is kind of me unpacking that word in my life and what it means to live in that way.
I feel like we should like get a piece of paper and on one side put fierce-hearted and on the other side put fine, and then just put parts of our life in there. And what is that we seem to share as women about something may happen, someone may hurt us, we may be disappointed, whatever it is, we may be challenged. And instead of going on that fierce-hearted side, we tend to go on the fine side. What is that, and how can we stop doing that?
Yeah, that's such a great way to put it. I think fine is safe, you know, and fierce-hearted is brave, and fine is protective, and fierce-hearted is vulnerable, and fine is isolated, and fierce-hearted is in community, even when it's hard. You know, we could make a list of all those things. So I think as women, we all just tend to do that. You know, I would like to sit here and say, you know, I've never done that once since I wrote this book. But of course I have, you know, and I'm sure everyone listening has. I mean, that's the natural tendency of us. And so I think it's something we just learn to do a little bit at a time, that we find safe people to help us live that way too, that we keep pressing into Jesus. But I think it's recognizing that we don't have to settle for fine. You know, a lot of us think, that's as good as it gets, that fine is all I'm allowed. And after being on this journey, I just don't believe that's true. And that doesn't mean that life is easy or we're happy all the time, but I do believe that Jesus promises us life to the full.
And we can't really get there with fine, can we?
No, fine is not life to the full, you know? It's comfortable and it's nice, and there's some days where I'm totally okay with that, you know, just get me fine. But I think it's encouraging to know there is more than fine for us.
So you wrote that as people were reading this book and going on this journey with you, that you started to find out that you really weren't the only one who may have been feeling this same way, where you were choosing fine over fierce-hearted, or you were kind of sinking back instead of moving forward. How did you find out that you weren't the only one, and how did that feel for you?
Well, that's the beautiful, terrifying thing about saying I'm not fine is other people say, you know what, I'm not either. And over that happened to me, where I would kind of take a little step towards saying, this is what I'm struggling with. You know, I'm tired. I've been hurt. Like, I need some prayers and support and some chips and salsa, you know. And just hearing more and more women say, you know what, I'm in that place also, or I have been in the past, or, you know, maybe I haven't been there yet, but I'm sure I will be in the future. And just realizing it, that none of us are fine, really, you know, that we are humans in a hard, broken world. And that doesn't mean that life is bad. It just means that it's okay to be real, to admit when we're having a hard day, to also admit when we're happy and need someone to celebrate with us. And so I think, again, like you said, it's about going outside of those borders that fine puts around us, which are really kind of like fences where we end up all alone. And when we knock those down, we realize there's a whole lot of other folks right there with us.
Mm-hmm. I remember I was sitting in a Bible study with some women who were probably 20, 25 years older than me, and they had said, oh, I wish I would have started doing Bible study when I was in my 20s. I feel like I would have navigated life better. And now that I'm, of course, 20 years older than that point in time, I realize, well, of course, those challenges are still happen, whether you're with Jesus or without Jesus. And of course, you'd rather do it with Jesus. But all of those challenges that we have in our lives happen regardless. But who we get to do those with is very different if we are in Christ.
Yes, that is very true.
So as I was reading your book, I was just thinking, you know, there's so many women who may have some of these same struggles, and yet you somehow found this deep communication with God that allowed you to push through being uncomfortable, being vulnerable, and maybe feeling unsafe. Can you tell me what would get you through when you felt like, I need to stop this now?
Well, I had a lot of outside help. You know, I'd like to say, hey, it was just me and Jesus, and, like, we did this all by ourselves. And, you know, but the reality is, like, when I got home from that trip, I called up my closest friends, and I told them, hey, you know what? I'm not in a good place, and I need some help and support. I called my counselor and said, I need to come see you. I went to my doctor, and I said, you know what? I have a tendency toward depression and anxiety. I always have. It's genetic, and I need to make sure that I'm doing everything I can physically to deal with what's going on in my life right now, you know? And so I think when we're in a hard place, we need people to be Jesus with skin on to us. Mm. And I thankfully had a lot of folks who did that for me. And if someone's listening and thinking, I don't have that, you know, I don't have a tribe, I would say that's okay. We all go through seasons of life where we just don't. And my thought would be, start with a counselor. You know, I love counseling. I will go probably for the rest of my life off and on. I would rather go there than to the spa for manicure and pedicure. Mm-hmm. Like, send me to counseling. So even if that one person is a counselor or one trusted friend, just start speaking the truth of what's really going on out loud. So I think that really helped. And then just coming back to the place, reminding myself over and over that I am loved as I am, because the enemy always tries to tell us in those times, like, you're failing, you're not a good enough Christian, like, you write books for women, you know, how can you be feeling this way? And so knowing who can be truth speakers to us when the lies get loud, and going back to God and his word, where he says over and over again, I love you, I am for you, I am going to get you through this. I think that's what it takes.
Well, and one of your chapters is called Brave Hard Thing, and it's about the courage it takes for women to kind of take time away from caring for others to actually make time to care for ourselves. Why does this seem to be such a difficult concept for women to grasp, and what's the danger of not doing it?
Yeah, I think we as women are so quick to take care of everyone else. We have huge hearts, which is a beautiful thing. But we often don't do that for ourselves because we think it's selfish. And I had to really wrestle through that to understand, you know what, when I'm taking care of myself, it's not selfish. It's preparing me for service. Because I almost got taken out. Like, I was at a place of burnout where I could have just been sidelined, you know, no more books. My relationships could have taken a huge hit. Like, I really could have gotten taken out. And so taking care of myself was actually an act of service because it allowed me to move forward and to be in a place where I could continue to love my family and my friends, to do the ministry that God has called me to, you know, move forward in His plan for my life. And so I think we need to think one step past the actual action. So if I think I'm exhausted, I need a nap, and I hear I'm selfish, then I can ask, okay, is that really true? What will this nap lead to? Well, it will probably lead to me being a bit more patient with my toddlers or to having the energy to wrap up that project at work the next day or to, you know, serve at church where God has placed me in this season. Like, when we look past the immediate thing that we need to do to take care of ourselves, we realize that the effect of that action is going to help a lot of other people.
Such wise words. I'm talking to Holly Girth today. She's written a new book called Fierce Hearted, Live Fully and Love Bravely. We'll be back to talk with Holly about her book, about other things that she's been working on this year as well. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us today. Well, I'm talking with Holly Girth today about her book, Fierce Hearted, Live Fully and Love Bravely. Well, Holly, you don't really like conflict. I think that 98% of the people that are listening today would agree. What is it about conflict that makes you want to run and hide?
Everything. Well, I think conflict, it just feels like if there's conflict, then I might be rejected. I might lose this person's love or affection or respect. You know, this relationship matters to me. And so I would just rather silence my own voice rather than take the risk of speaking the truth sometimes. You know, and so that I did that for many years, which in my life looked like saying yes when I probably should have said no, taking on a lot more than I probably could have handled, things like that, you know, that we as women tend to do. And that also really contributed to burnout in my life as well. And so one of the things that God really taught me through the process of writing Fierce Hearted is how to speak the truth in love. And I discovered that when we do that, it actually strengthens relationships. I was so surprised, and frees us as well, because then we're not carrying burdens that are so heavy that we end up way down and resentful, and it ends up damaging the relationship in the end. So I'm still learning a lot about conflict, but I definitely see it differently than when I started this process.
Well, and you wrote that addressing the conflict really requires you to be present in that situation versus saying that, oh, I'm fine, I'm going to get over it, and then moving on. But to be present to allow, A, the hurt to take place, and then, B, the step that's needed in order to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Did you need to do that when you had this hurt that with your friend? And how did you go about doing that? Because this would have been a situation where you didn't back down. You actually moved forward and spoke that truth in love.
Yes, I had been hurt by someone, and I actually allowed myself to have a little bit of space before I tried to resolve that conflict. And I had always just felt this urgency, like, I have to make this better immediately. You know, even if that means covering up how I really feel about it, I just have to say everything's okay because I hate conflict and it's bad and scary. And so that allows wounds to fester, you know, because they don't get resolved. So I gave myself some space to process. And I thought a lot about that verse that says, you know, don't let the sun go down on your anger. And yet there's another one in Psalms that talks about, like, in your anger, do not sin. Like, think about it overnight, basically. And so I was like, how does this work? So I think really when it says don't let the sun go down on your anger, it's saying like, don't let your anger turn into darkness. You know, that bitterness and that hardness, and that we know what that's like when our heart turns dark towards someone. And I knew if that wasn't going to happen, I needed a little bit of time. So I did that for the first time ever. And then I actually did go to the person and say, you know, this really hurt me, and here's why, and I value our relationship, but this isn't okay. And we processed that. And then, like I mentioned before the break, I went to counseling and worked through some things. And so I proactively took some steps instead of just saying, it's okay, it's fine that I'm hurt. And so that was hard and scary, and I hope I never have to do it again, even though I probably will. But it was also freeing to know that a relationship could make it through something like that, and that I was okay to defend my own heart.
Well, it's so interesting when we think about that it's easy to just walk away. And maybe there would have been a point in, you know, junior high or maybe in my early 20s where I would have walked away from a relationship that just wasn't working, be it a friendship or a romantic relationship or something. But, you know, as I've gotten older, it seems like, well, those relationships matter so much that walking away simply isn't an option. And at that point, it does take a courage to have to lean in, and that is really, really hard.
It is really hard, and I think it's learning to guard our hearts. You know, I love that image. Proverbs says, you know, above all else, guard your heart, because everything you do flows from it. And to me, guard is like such an intentional word. Like I picture like a literal guard standing there, and I think that's what it means, that we get really intentional about how we respond and who we let into our hearts, and then who we say, you know what, I'm going to love you and treat you with kindness, but you're not safe, and so you don't get access to all of me. And so even going through this process with this particular person, I knew that resolution was possible and that she was overall a safe person and we could get to a good place. But I know people are probably listening too, and I've had discussions with friends about this, that sometimes it's not possible and that we have to hold people at a distance or have hard boundaries, and that's okay too, that it's really just saying, I'm going to ask Jesus what it is he wants me to do specifically in each relationship, and I'm going to guard my heart. And that takes time and intention and practice and is messy, but I think it makes us ultimately stronger and more loving women, because we can authentically be in our relationships.
Oh, that's so true. I mean, if you're talking about being fierce-hearted, you could think that meant that you were to be really direct, but a fierce-hearted can also be a really soft heart, a soft heart toward people, and to love them more maybe than they deserve, or to be loved more than we deserve. What a great way to be fierce-hearted.
I would say that's the core of it. You know, I like to say having a soft heart in a hard world is courage, not weakness.
Such wise words from Holly Girth. She's written a new book called Fierce Hearted, Live Fully, Love Bravely. And we'll be right back on Connecting.
The gate is wide, the road is paved in moderation. The crowd is kind and quick to pull you. Yeah.
Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Well, today I'm talking with author and writer Holly Girth. She's written a book called Fierce Hearted, Live Fully and Love Bravely. We've had her on before to talk about her book, You're Already Amazing. And Holly, this one was a little more vulnerable than maybe the books in the past, even though I thought those were plenty vulnerable as well. But as I was reading through this one, I found it's just this new level of openness that you've kind of used to describe what's going on in your life and what has been going on in your life. Part of that was a decade-long struggle with infertility. Can you tell me a little bit about how that affected the relationship you had with your husband and what you both knew to be true of what God had planned for you?
Yes, well, that was a long journey in our lives and plenty of heartbreak and loss and wondering, you know, what are we doing wrong and why isn't God answering our prayers, and watching everyone around us, it seemed like, have 15 babies while we didn't have any yet. So thankfully, he and I were mostly in the same place as we went along, and that was a gift. I know that's not always the case, that a lot of times couples end up really divided and in very different places, but it actually ultimately brought us closer, and I'm so grateful for that, that we could share that grief and frustration and all those unanswered questions. And like we talked about before, God eventually brought us a daughter. She just happened to be 20, and we are now grandparents as well, to a sweet little girl named Ellie, who arrived on the day that we made everything official with our daughter Lavelle. We call Girth Day because that's our last name, and she took our last name, and it's August 28th, and her little girl came on August 28th on Girth Day.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was so fun. So we've enjoyed hanging out with her and her husband and little Ellie and getting to be grandparents, too.
Well, and when you think about, I'm sure if you're thinking about those 10 years that you had with those struggles, that this is probably the situation that you wouldn't have imagined, and yet God's grace is all over that, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, down to the day our granddaughter came, you know? So I think sometimes when we're, especially in those long seasons, it can just feel like God has forgotten about us, or he's not in the details, or he's not working on our behalf. But all along, he knew down to the very day where this story was going. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say that lightly. You know, I'm in a different place now where the pain isn't as fresh. And so I don't ever want to talk about it in a way that makes people who are in the thick of it feel like I'm dismissing that or telling them they need to not be in pain or to get over it quickly. But I just want to say there is hope. There is hope. And even when we can't see it, God is working out something for our good.
Well, and there was something in your book, and I can't remember which subject you were talking about, but you had written about how hard it is to sometimes write about a situation when you're in the thick of it, how sometimes it's easier to be telling a testimony years later when you've gotten through it. And yet you're still able, you do that. You do that for our benefit, the people who are reading, so that when we're in the thick of it, we can actually hear your words and your struggle. And what a great gift that you're able to give those of us who are reading your book, to know that even in that difficult time, you're still able to verbalize what it is that's going on, the struggles that you're having.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that verse that says we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. And really, the word of our testimony is a fancy way of saying our stories. Like, and so I think that verse is really saying we overcome by what Jesus did for us and by telling that story. And I know when I hear a story of what God has done in someone else's life, it strengthens me and gives me hope and helps me take the next step. And I think sometimes we start believing that our stories have to be fancy, or they have to be finished, or they have to be impressive or neatly wrapped up. But I think there's so much power in just saying, this is my story. You know, this is where I am today. This is where God had me yesterday. This is what he has done for me. And I think that's a beautiful gift we can give each other. It's just to say, here's my imperfect glory-filled, God-given story, because we all need to speak those and we all need to hear them.
Well, and you touched on that a little bit with your book, You're Already Amazing. But I read in this book, Fierce Hearted, that you also write about that concept of being small or being ordinary rather than leaning into the culture's idea of this egocentric, success, achievement-based culture, that being small and ordinary is really the goal. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. That was the other part of this season. You know, I'd been through this time of launching books and speaking a lot and being out there and being very visible in many ways, which is not my comfort zone because, as the book shares, like, I'm an off-the-charts introvert, but that's a place where I felt like God had put me for a season. And then I came to a point where I knew He was saying, it's time to pull back. It's time to go home. It's time for you to have some rest and healing. And it was scary because I thought, well, I've got to prove my worth. I need to make things happen. How am I going to be able to do this? And I think we all feel that pressure. And just understanding that our worth doesn't come from our works. And that's what is small and hidden is often what is most valuable to God. That we can worship Him if we're standing in front of a microphone, and we can worship Him if we're standing next to the microwave in our yoga pants with the dirty dishes in the sink. And so I really needed some realignment in my own heart about that, because I had just felt such pressure to perform, and I put that on myself. You know, I'm just kind of wired that way. But remembering that God wants our heart first, then our hands, and that we are loved because we are His, not because of what we do.
Who helps you to kind of stay in that place and not get enticed by this allure, the pull of being out there or fame or success? How do you stay in that place?
I think it's my tribe that I talked about before. I have a group of friends who are local, and they could care less if what I do. You know, they're like, Holly's Holly. If I showed up tomorrow and said, I'm never writing a book again, and I deleted everything off the internet, they'd be like, all right, let's go get ice cream. And so I think we need people in our lives that really love us for who we are, and my family's that way too. And so finding those folks that you can be real with and who will remind you that you don't have to hustle for your worth, I think that's a big part of it for me. And then, again, going back to God's word over and over and over, making that a daily practice, because the lies are so loud, you know, and oftentimes God speaks in a whisper. And so it takes that time of leaning in and listening and letting Him tell us over and over again every day, you know what, you're loved as you are. And you're my kiddo, and I'm going to use you wherever you are today.
Well, that's such a great lesson, especially for young people who are kind of going out into the world right now, or teenagers who are thinking that they have to be or do something that is big by culture standards. And that seems so opposite to what God is telling us about ourselves, that big and bold and successful doesn't need to be famous.
No, I keep telling myself, especially lately, what's visible isn't what's most valuable. We tend to think that in our culture, you know, whatever makes us be seen or heard or get attention, that's what's valuable. But I think in the kingdom, what's invisible is most valuable. And those are things like love and faith and kindness and investing in the people around us every day and choosing to be content where we are. And all of that is hard, but I think it's what it means to be a good and faithful servant, like Jesus talks about. So it's reassuring to know that wherever we are, it's okay if God gives us a big place in the world's eyes, but it's just as meaningful and valuable and precious to Him if He gives us a small place. And for many of us, it'll just alternate in different seasons. You know, we may have a big corporate job in one season and another be home rocking a newborn, you know, or at some point we may be doing a lot, and then at another point we may be doing quieter things, and that both are okay, because it's not about our circumstances. Our circumstances don't define our identity.
Although it seems really difficult to remind ourselves of that, which is why it
yes.
is so helpful to have
yes.
it.
Every day, all the time.
A tribe yes. is good. I remember complaining to a spiritual director about all the things I hadn't done yet. And she finally said, "Who told you that you need to do those things?" And it was just such a good thing for me to think about. And when I get stewing in, I haven't done this yet and I haven't done that yet, I hear her voice in my head that says, well, who told you that you needed to do those things? And
yeah.
it's a good reminder. I kind of wish I just had her sitting on my shoulder at all times.
I know, right? Yeah, my counselor says, you say should all the time. She like forbid me to say should. I'm like, you mean I shouldn't say should? She's like, can't say shouldn't either. So, yes, I'm saying all those things. You know, it's always easy to say things, but whatever I'm saying, I'm definitely still in the process of learning to live. So.
Oh, so true. You know, you mentioned that counseling has been a big help to you in seasons, especially of unrest that all of us go through. And sometimes even opening up that it's a need to speak to someone else and for someone to speak into your life, whether it's a counselor, pastor, spiritual director. And sometimes people consider that need, just having a need, to be an area of weakness, but I love how you just dispel that stigma and encourage women to not be afraid to reach out and to admit that we do have some needs. How has that worked for your life?
Well, I think it's just really freeing to be able to say, you know what, I can't do life on my own, and that means I need a variety of people around me. And for me, that includes a counselor, it includes a doctor, it includes heart friends, you know, and that makeup probably looks different for all of us. But I think we somehow get confused and think that Jesus is all we need. But even in the Garden of Eden, before the fall, when everything was perfect, God said, it's not good for man to be alone. Like, it's not good. That's the first time God says anything is not good. And so if God designed it for us to need him alone and not each other, he wouldn't have said that. And so when we need other people, it's not a failure. It's not weakness. It's not a lack of faith on our part. It's aligning with the design that God created for humanity. So it's always okay to say, I need some help. Mm-hmm. You know, I need some help. I need someone else to come alongside me. That is an act of courage and strength and faithfulness, and it helps other people too, like we talked about, because others need to know that we don't have it all together, because that gives them permission to be imperfect also. And when we realize we're imperfect, then we realize we're not God.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends up bringing him more glory a lot of times than we do when we feel the need to have everything together and look good on the outside all the time.
Oh, it's such a good point. In fact, I think that sometimes I find a little bit too much pleasure in finding that some of my friends who I think maybe be perfect, that they're not. And then somehow it makes me feel a little better. And then I feel a bit guilty for thinking that, because that's just not, it's not as kind as I feel like I would like to be. And yet that might be God's way of just saying, hey, we're all in this together, and no one's going to be able to stand alone and be stubbornly self-sufficient. And if they are, well, then they're not telling you something.
Yeah, I think that's so true.
Well, I'm talking to Holly Girth today about her book, Fierce Hearted, Live Fully, Love Bravely. We have a little bit of time left, but we're going to take a quick break. If you're listening today and you'd like to get one of Holly's books in your hands, you can go right to our website at myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. You'll be able to submit your name and contact information that way, and we'll do a drawing for her book at the end of the show today. We'll be right back with Holly Girth.
Crashes over me for you are for, and you are not again.
and you make me brave. You make me brave. You call me out beyond the shore into the waves. You make me brave. You make me brave. No fear can hinder now the love that made a way. You make me brave. You make me brave. You call me out beyond the shores to the waves. You make me brave. You make me brave.
Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Joe Bender talking to Holly Girth today about her new book, Fierce-Hearted. Holly, a lot of what you write just has to do with some personal experiences of going through maybe a season of vulnerability for you. And yet a lot of us think, I don't want to go to a place of vulnerability. And I remember talking to a friend of mine saying, I don't really like this spot that I'm in and I just want to get out of it. And she said, I can't wait to see what happens on the other side. So how do we embrace when we're in that season where we need to spend some time alone with God, knowing that good things are going to happen once we get to the other side? How can we sit with that?
That's a great question, you know. But I had that season of vulnerability, but it's not what I chose. I kind of got to a place where there was no other option. So I think that's a lot of times how these things come to us. At least me, I don't like raise my hand and say, I'm going to be super spiritual and ask for a season of vulnerability.
No,
instead, I'm
me
like
neither.
Sobbing by myself on a plane and I'm like, oh, here I am. So I think it's when we find ourselves in those places, giving ourselves permission to be there, you know? And so instead of saying to ourselves, you just need to get over this, or what's the matter with you, or everyone else is keeping it together, like, why can't you? You know, that inner critical voice that we talk to ourselves like we would never talk to a friend or someone we loved. So instead of saying, you know what, I'm hurting right now. Like, there is some deep part of me that is trying to tell me that something's not okay. And I'm going to listen. I'm going to figure out what that's about. And then I think that is, like we've talked about already, you know, taking that to Jesus first, then taking it to trustworthy people and just fighting shame. I think we experience shame when we're in a place we don't want to be. And so, again, knowing that our circumstances don't define us. If we're in a bad place, it doesn't mean we're a bad Christian. It means we're a human in this world. And resting in that identity that we are the same and love just as much on our best day as on our worst one. So I'd even, you know, if someone's listening right now and the enemy has just been lying and saying, you know what, because you're going through this hard thing, you're a failure or you're not loved or God's not going to use you anymore. That is not true. Instead, he is there to sit with us in that place and to tell us over and over again we're loved, and to eventually take us by the hand and lead us past that. But I think it is just letting ourselves be there is the first step.
Mm. And not trying to claw our way out. In fact, I love that you write that we will have little seasons where some really great things happen out of being in that place where we don't want to be, and that we should celebrate those. In fact, you write about having taco time, making sure to celebrate those, getting through hard things. What's that all about, and why is that important?
Yes. Whenever I do a brave, hard thing for myself, I celebrate, usually with tacos. So I wrote about going to the doctor to talk about, you know, my depression and anxiety. And then afterward, I went to the taco place down the road that I love and don't get to go to very often, and got my favorite taco and felt just triumphant because I'd done a brave, hard thing. So I think we need to acknowledge that it's not easy to do the heart work that is really going to make a difference, and that when we manage it, that it's okay to celebrate.
Well, and sometimes it seems celebrating with other people too would just be a great way to celebrate what's going on. Yeah, I loved reading the story about your husband and how you guys met for the first time. And he made you participate in a little adventure that may have been a little uncomfortable, but how that really gave you an idea of what it meant to have Christ with you as well. Can you tell us about that and how being with other people is also a really great way to celebrate who God is in your life?
Yes. So Mark and I met in college. We've been married 17 years now, and we met on a retreat, and then he asked me to go mountain biking for our first date. Well, I grew up in Texas where the roads are flat, and the last bike I had been on was a pink Schwinn 10-speed, and so I was picturing, like, we're just, you know, cruising along the sidewalk, and it's going to be so romantic. No, we, like, go to the state park and are basically, like, biking down the side of a mountain, and I think I'm going to die. And at the very end, like, I'm disgusting and sweaty, and Mark has, like, rounded this bend in the trail, and I can't see him. I might have even cried a little bit, and then I come around, and he's right there. Like, we've made it to the car, and he's waiting for me, and years later, I was like, why did you leave me? And he was like, I never left you. I always knew exactly where you were and exactly where we were going. And I was like, oh, that's how it is with God a lot. You know, that he always knows exactly where we are and exactly where we're going. And Mark and I have definitely been able to celebrate that together. You know, I happened to get tacos on my own that day, but I think we may even have gone out to dinner too. But a lot of times we'll just say, you know what, we made it through this hard thing. Let's go celebrate. Mm. And that is a gift. I think we do need to celebrate with each other that, you know, like scripture talks about, we mourn with those who mourn, but we also rejoice with those who rejoice. And that's an important part of life too.
Mm. Well, and as I near the end of our conversation, and as I neared the end of your book as well, I loved the chapter where you wrote yourself a little graduation speech as well of things that you know now, what I know now. What's one of the most important things that you know now, having completed this journey and birthed this book? What's one of the most important things you've learned about yourself?
I think one of the most important is that I don't have to hustle for my worth, that I'm loved as I am. And that's a lesson I'll have to remind myself of every single day for the rest of my life. But I do feel like I know it to be true in a different, deeper way than before.
Mm. That's just beautiful. And I mean, that is so well spoken throughout your entire book. And I just want to thank you again for taking the time and making the effort to just birth that book for all of us so that we can listen and hear and be richer because of it. You know, many people may be listening today and they might want to get connected with you or read more about what you write. How would they go about doing that?
I would love to get connected with them. I would love to have coffee at our favorite shop, you know, together. But until then, I would love for folks to come to hollygirth.com. There's a blog there that you can subscribe to for free email devotionals and also a little shop where all my books are and more information about how to get those other places too. So I would love for everyone to stop by.
Wonderful. Well, Holly Girth, we thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Her book, again, is called Fierce Hearted, Live Fully, Love Bravely. I assume they can buy that anywhere books are sold.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much. And again, we'll have Holly's information on our website at myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. You'll be able to find a podcast of this show and many others. And you can get connected with Holly if you go to that site as well, because we'll have all her contact information too. Thanks again for listening to Connecting Faith. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.